You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show, normally hosted by Mr. Dale Gillespie. As we have announced all week this week, Dale will be taking the next few weeks off. He has to get take care of so many things. This guy's so overwhelmed, it's unreal. So we're going to do a little bit of covering for him. With that in mind, occasionally we were planning on doing some replay shows. And I'm glad to tell you that right now we've got a great friend of the show. He's also one of my business partners. Fantastic man in the community. He's worked as a retired police officer. Knows just about everything there is to know about Louisville, bridges, you name it. Long story short, Rob Chapman, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing fine, Ed. How are you tonight?
I am fantastic. You know, with all that said, I want the audience to understand, you know, this is your show tonight, man. Welcome to it. It's all on you. I'm going to shut up unless I want to interject. You know me. So start your show. I appreciate it, Rob. And for you guys listening in, have a great time because I think Rob's got some great information for you. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, Ed, thanks. For those of you who don't know me, I'm an occasional guest on the show. Ed calls me and asks my opinion about a lot of stuff. I think I'd like to take the show. You know, Dale has some really, really strong opinions, and for the most part, they're pretty well founded. But what I'd like to do is ask the listeners. You know, what do you want to hear? There's a lot of stuff going on in this city. We do have a great city, and you know, I think, you know, we need to get away from the stuff that's being pushed by the mayor's office and GLI and the powers that be and make this city ourself. You know, there's been this long-standing thing, keep Louisville weird. Well, I firmly believe in it. You know, I worked downtown for 20 years, and, you know, and I dealt with the citizens, I dealt with the business leaders, I've dealt with everybody, you know, and there's just a lot more that can go on with this city. And I guess, you know, one of the reasons I like Ed and I have become friends since I retired, and I like Ed because he speaks his mind. And that's the problem with, you know, the powers that be in this city is you're you know, outside of the mainstream media, you're shut off. We have a population of 1 million people, and we have 4 local TV stations regurgitating the same crap, you know, every day. It's they steal the same stories from all the same sources. It's like that Jay Leno bit from the other night where they went through and they played, you know, gas is going up from 20 different TV stations, and they were all the exact same script. Well, that's what we get here in Louisville. And there's a bigger story, and there's more to it, and there's more behind, you know. Who out here has been just completely flummoxed why they can't get the police to their house inside of, you know, some kids are playing, you know, making a lot of noise outside, and you call the police, it takes 45 minutes to 2 hours for the cops to show up. How come the guy down the street can take his Nova apart and leave the engine block in the front yard, in his front yard, but you get a tag by IPL for not cutting your grass in the last 2 weeks? How is it takes us 30 years to finally agree to build a bridge only after one of them breaks and we have to sit in traffic for 2 hours to go home? You know, those are the kinds of questions we ask. How to cut the red tape, how to make this a better place to live for the people who actually pay taxes. Don't you agree, Ed?
Oh, I agree totally. It's one of the reasons I do what I do every day. It's a situation in Louisville where, you know, there are so many things you're bringing up, like the IPL. That is nothing but a farce. You know, all the things in government is what I rely on, is because government is the problem, and so that's why I go after political leaders who are corrupt and go after political entities that are corrupt. You know, so how, you know, for me, when you talk about how to make this city a better place, I always think of it's only going to get better if we have better leadership. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you go, like, leadership. For example, the governor is calling a special district, special session on redistricting because the politicians can't agree. The census reports came back. We have to redistrict. But now here comes the political fight, and we're going to gerrymander these districts. You know, I grew up in a city that everything inside the Waterston was Democrat-controlled. Or, I'm sorry, inside the Gene Snyder Freeway. Everything, it was Democrat. They had it just gerrymandered where everything was Democrat. The only Republican districts were outside the Gene Snyder. The congressional district for Republicans ran all the way from northern Kentucky, from the Cincinnati area, all the way down to Louisville, wrapped around Louisville, and went out into the rural areas. Does that make any... Does a person who lives just outside of E-Town, Ed, have anything in common with a person who lives near Cincinnati?
No, in no way, shape, or form. And you know, but we really have, when you look at the gerrymandering of districts and you realize the Democrat control that permeates this state, it's also at city level, too. If you look at Louisville and the gerrymandering for the 26 Metro Council districts, it's easy to understand why the Democrats have had all the power. Not just since we went to this Metro Council and merged government, but the aldermen had all the power before because they always gerrymander it, and the people who are making the decisions to do that are the ones who are in power. So, okay.
You know, these are the kind of things, like our local leadership, they take care of themselves. You know, we had a meeting with, you know, a prominent, and I'm not going to name the guy, I'm not going to out him. But he was a very senior, prominent person, and we were talking about an issue with an elected official that he had no idea the office existed. You remember that? We're like, yeah, you know, the county judge executive. And he was like, we don't have a county judge executive.
Right.
And I'm sitting here looking at this guy going, you of all people should know. So we have elected officials who don't even know the basic, construct of our government. They don't know. That's why I decided to do a little bit more than check the web traffic on the website.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest with you. I mean, you know, for those of you who don't know, Rob is the IT guy for the MVM Radio Network and LouisvillePolitics.com. You know, Rob has part ownership in this company, and he takes care of all of that electronic stuff. Because Rob always reminds me that I'm the Fred Flintstone of the internet, and you know, he's actually right. When I use that term publicly, it's because I got it from him. But you know, Rob, when we look at this kind of stuff, though, you know, we continue to talk about like the county judge executive. The Jefferson County judge executive is Brian Matthews. Now, here in Jefferson County, thanks to KRS 67C. The county judge executive and the other commissioners were not eliminated with merger. They had to eliminate that constitutionally through the state, and they've never went after that. So these are elected positions, but they're basically just who you know kind of a deal. You can write in anybody and anything else. It's the most favorite votes, but there is no pay. There's no responsibility. They have no say in anything. They're no different than a citizen. You know, they have no authority whatsoever. But people run for those offices because they like to feed that ego and put that out there. But it's amazing how many people in power, like you pointed out, don't even realize that that these jobs still exist. You know, merger did not merge, Jefferson County and Louisville like everybody hoped it would. What merger did is it incorporated basically downtown Louisville and gave them all of the Jefferson County money. But there is no actual merger on anything. It's strange. It really is.
You know, it's we always get back to merger and how screwed up it became. You know, I was a victim of merger. I was one of the most avid, ardent fans of merger. However, you know, just a few weeks after merger, you know, I remember going over to my parents' house and, you know, we're like, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I just remember my dad going, I don't see police cars anymore.
Right.
And how come I still got to pay for garbage collection? you know, all these people, nothing has changed. You have the urban service district, and you have the unincorporated parts of the county. And and based on my experience working in city government, I can tell you that the independent cities have become even more independent.
Mm-hmm.
They are far from cooperative because of what happened when we merged. The attitude that everybody had, and you know that everybody in metro government had, and they all went screw you and got up and walked out of the meeting. You know, I mean,
It's fascinating. What's really fascinating too is, I mean, they tried to this so-called merger so many times, it's unreal. And ultimately what happened was that when they first tried to get merger, they had the county vote on whether they wanted to merge, the old county limits, on whether they wanted to merge with the city of Louisville or not. And the county unanimously voted it down every time. So the last time they decided they were going to do it, they decided to open it up and have the independent cities and the urban services district people, the city of Louisville, and all those people vote on it too. And it barely squeaked by. You know, it's interesting you bring up the point that nothing has changed, and that is the reality. I still have not to this day understood why nobody is forcing the issue of voting merger out. I mean, let's take it back to the way it was, because the county is doing without everything. The city is getting everything and are using our money to do it. I live in a county, you know, but as far as garbage and stuff like that, you know, we've repeatedly told the whole world. The garbage service pickups and everything else, the urban services district actually pays a slightly higher tax rate for those services. Now, that's the one thing the county doesn't do. We didn't get the higher tax rate because we're not in the urban services district, so we've got to continue paying for the same stuff we always did. So, you know, it's mind-boggling to me. They continue to act like we've got this merged thing, but we really don't. And when you talk about the merged government, you mentioned police officers. You don't see police officers anymore, because once they combine the police departments, they actually have less police officers total on the street. And you know that's where you came from. So the question is, what do you do to fix it? I mean, I don't know.
Well, what destroyed that, and here's a little secret. I mean, it was fully reported in the Courier-Journal that when the city and the county merged, it took the Department of Justice, the block grant, the agency that runs block grants, it took them about 6 months. When the next year came around and we applied for our grants, all of a sudden they figured out that the city and county all those years had been double dipping on each other's grant statistics. The county had been claiming our homicide rate, and you know the county and city, they'd been reporting Jefferson County totals as entities. So the city of Louisville, as it existed at the time, got block grants for policing and public safety, and the county got block grants for policing and public safety. Well, it took about 6 months to a year, and all of a sudden, every bit of overtime, all the extra patrol cars. I can tell you it all went away because the grant money went away, because the DOJ came in and said, oops, and the grant money got cut in half.
Right.
You know, and the way to look at that is, if you're driving down the street and you see you're driving down the street, Ed, you drive. I've seen your truck. It rolls. Have you seen a white police car? You remember the white police? Do you see white police cars?
Oh, I do remember the white police cars. I do remember
those
white police cars.
Those white police cars were originally city police cars.
Yep.
They are 2002 police cars with almost 400,000 miles on them on average. Those cars are still in service. Prior to merger, we got new cars every 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, but it's awful hard.
Those cars are rolling death traps. The white cars, that's how old those white cars are. They were all restriped, repainted, and rebadged for Metro Police. The silver cars are all new. But the white cars, you know, I kind of laugh when I go, man, those are still out there?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm not trying to interrupt you. I mean, this is your show, but for me personally, when you talk about the cars having 400,000 miles on them, and these are older cars and stuff like that, you talk about replacing police cars every 3 to 4 years. That's a hell of a cost to the taxpayer. I guess my question would be, in what capacity are these older cars being used? If they're not being used for emergency service, you know, like police runs or stuff like that, if they're being used by a detective to go serve papers or something, I really don't have much problem with that. But if we're relying on these as a first responder type of situation, then that changes the whole dynamic. You know what I mean?
Well, usually what happens is the older cars go to the younger officers, and the younger officers are the ones who work the streets. And those
right.
cars, you know, they, you know, a lot of people, well, if it still rolls, and here's the problem with that. Today's technology for a police car, you're talking about the electronics in the car chews up batteries. And those older cars have standard alternators, standard
right.
packages. They weren't built for the stuff they're running. So, you know, every 3 months, they get a new battery. And you know as well as I do, the older a car gets, the more stuff just breaks. It's just a numbers game. You know, I remember I used to laugh because we used to buy the cars and leave them over in Indiana. Because as long as they stayed in Indiana, there was a big lot in Indiana. Anywhere from 50 to 100 city vehicles in it, trucks, ambulances, fire trucks, everything. As long as they stayed over there, they didn't have to pay their Kentucky sales tax or what, you know, however that works with the transition of the title. They didn't have to start making the payments on them or something.
But let me ask you this, if I can. You know, if we're going to start talking about buying new cars and things, I could tell you this. In July, when I was illegally arrested by LMPD, the two officers that had me pulled, they had my son pulled over that were illegally searching his car that arrested me for asking why. For them, they had new cars. These guys had been on the force 3 years. They had new cars. You know, when we look
that's
at this,
that's because they were making their quota.
Okay, well, see, there you go. Now you're mentioning the one word that most people won't talk about is a quota. But here's the thing, though, and since you mentioned quota, I'm glad you went there because I would like to ask this one because I want to understand it myself. These guys illegally arrested me because they were on some sort of a power trip and thought they were badasses. 2 weeks ago, we mediated a cash settlement with the city because of this. It cost the city thousands of dollars, not only to me, but I'm just one man. How much money, you talk about quotas, if these guys are writing 10 tickets a day and they're making a couple of hundred bucks a day for the city and they're putting out $10,000 a day, you know, because they're having to mediate settlements and things like that on average, you know, where do you get the money for the cars? That's the thing for me. If these guys are costing the city so much money, I don't have the number yet, and I'm trying to get that through open records now. But I want to know how much the city is paying out each year in lawsuits on average for the crap that they put me through. I mean, I got paid.
Well,
I'm not going to lie to anybody, you know.
Well,
but,
I cracked a joke. First of all, quotas the U.S. Supreme Court said quotas in law enforcement are illegal.
But we know they exist.
Quotas. Now, what exists are statistics. And if you've ever watched an episode of The Commish or The OC or The Wire, you know, you'll
right.
hear these buzzwords called CompStat. And CompStat's
right.
the know-all, end-all, and be-all of policing. Basically, it's a computer statistical analysis of what's going on in your city. And it was invented by the city of New York, and they use statistics-driven policing. You know, it's like the chief of police goes, okay, we've got all the beats covered, and they look at crime statistics, and they go, okay, this precinct had so many murders and so many domestic violence calls. Let's get some stuff over here. And they keep, like, a tactical reserve. You know, they have their SWAT, you know, street crimes, you know, all their specialty units. And they go, okay, major of this district, here's some extra assets to address those issues. You know, that's how it started. And then they hold the commanders of the districts responsible. They go, okay, you've got 100 cops working in your district. We've given you all this stuff, and crime's still up. You're fired. Next guy. And that's how it's supposed to work. But what happens is because these majors are political appointees making $100,000 a year. They come in and they say, you know, Officer Hamsmack, your job is to go out and write 20 tickets tonight.
Well, right. So they're setting quotas.
Know,
you know,
well, it's a negative quote. What they've done is they, instead of saying we need 20, you know, we need you to go out and make $1,000 in citations tonight, like they were doing back in the 70s, you know, and then bringing them to city court, so all the money went to city court, and then the city made all the money. What they do now is you write it, you know, you write a citation, and the citation funds go to the administrative office of the courts. At state level, it goes to the General Assembly. All that money goes to Frankfurt. And then Frankfurt turns around and divvies it back. And the quotas in reverse, what how they do it is they punish officers, you know, okay, you only wrote 7 tickets all week. You're dead last on your platoon. You know, because I used to be a sergeant on the police department. I remember these conversations. You know, we got a bunch of new cars coming in, and because you're dead last in your platoon, you know, 25-year veteran, and you're up for a new car. Instead of a new car, the major's giving you this white clunker, this 1999 Crown Vic. Instead of a, you know, a 2013 Taurus, you're getting this old clunker. That's how they do it.
And see, and that's the problem, because that's how you get the assholes like Officer Brandon Wood and Officer Dustin Hinckley. And no, I've got no problem putting anybody's name out there. These jerks
well,
are
I
out
know
there.
You don't.
Well, I mean, yeah, no. But these jerks are out there falsely arresting people, you know, falsely accusing people, making up charges, you know, they're getting sued, the city's paying the lawsuits, but you know what, they're writing all these tickets, but it's costing more on lawsuits than it is that they're bringing in, so it's a net loss. And, you know, the Comstat report you just talked about, for me, you know, if you walk into a meeting and you see a Comstat report that says, okay, you know, our arrests for robberies are down, our speeding tickets are up, I want you guys to do nothing but work on robberies all week and forget the speeding tickets. You know, it's like a round robin. You are setting quotas, even though they call it something different. And that's the biggest problem. And we haven't even talked about profiling. So that cop has been on
well,
the force
no, no,
25
here,
years.
Let's talk. I'm going to bring up another public safety thing. And I don't know if this happened, but anybody who's ever had a car wreck or been arrested, well, no, this one. Here's another thing with murder. You're out in the county area. You're between the Waterson and the county line, or the Waterson and the Gene Snyder. You're in the J-Town area, Fern Creek, whatever, Fairdale, and you have a car accident. Your car's sitting in the middle of the road, and you have to have it towed. Well, MetroSafe will call a tow truck who's on a list. It's called a contract list. And they'll send a tow truck out. And when you get out of the hospital or out of jail or whatnot, you have to deal with the tow truck driver to find out where the heck your car is at.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you get locked up within the city, the urban service district, the city has tow trucks. I know you've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
And their job is to tow cars in the urban service district. You know, these guys, when they're not clearing car wrecks, you know, out of the lane of traffic, they're towing illegally parked vehicles. Well, all of those vehicles go to Frankfurt Avenue tow lot.
Right.
So you know where your car's at, and it's much cheaper to get your car out of the Logan Street tow lot than it is from a contract wrecker. I picked a lady up. When I got back from deployment, I've been gone for 2 years, and I came back, and a lady, you know, called just, she comes into the district bawling, oh, where's my car, and she couldn't find it, and I said, it's the end of my shift, I'll take care of this lady, don't worry about it. I ended up having to drive, you know where her car was?
Mm-mm.
You know where the Carrollton exit is?
Yeah.
Where the Kentucky Motor Speedway is?
Yeah.
It was at a repair place, a junkyard, up past between the Kentucky Motor Speedway and Belterra Casino.
Oh wow! From Louisville.
Yeah, the guy had a contract, you know, with the city to, you know, make his $300, and he had her car in this little chained in pen, and you know, we get out there like 8 o'clock at night, and I'm just standing here, I cannot believe how bad this lady got ripped off. I was never so embarrassed in my entire life for my city. I believe it.
Well, I believe it. There's a lot of people who get ripped off like that every day. I mean, they illegally towed my car when I was arrested. Now it went to Frankfort Avenue, but it still cost me $125 to get it out the next morning. You know, I mean, I ultimately got reimbursed for that, but, you know, because they were wrong. But they trump up all these charges to get all this money just to give it back. So it looks good on paper the day you do this stuff, but it costs you, you know, sometimes as much or 10 or 15 times what you took in because you screwed up. You know, that's a hell of a lot of tickets you got to write to make it up. And, see, that's the problem with me. And it's interesting, too, that you mentioned the tow truck, because I'm noticing a trend in another scam now. And that scam is in these traffic accidents. Anytime there's a traffic accident anymore and you call for an ambulance, you have a fire truck show up. The ambulance shows up and the fire truck shows up. It's a requirement now. Apparently, it's a requirement. But what ultimately happens here is the insurance companies.
The insurance companies double bill you.
Exactly. That's what I'm getting at. It's driving up the cost of your insurance and everything for everybody because the fire department is going to charge $5,000 minimum for leaving the station house, and the ambulance is going to charge their charge for showing up on a scene. So you're paying. They're double-dipping for emergency services against the insurance companies, thinking nobody's going to pay attention to it. We see it every day, and there you go. Now everybody's rates go up.
Well, what happened with fire trucks, okay, is two fire chiefs ago, we had a great fire chief. I forget the guy's name. He's now president of the American Firefighters Association, I believe. And he had this big push for his term as the fire chief, to put smoke detectors and fireproofing and had fire marshals all over the city because the city was a death trap. I mean, people died in fires every night. You know, we probably lost 100, 200 people a year in this city to fires. Because literally, Louisville inside of the Watterson, not downtown, I'm talking the urban district, you know, the West End, old Louisville, is a giant tinderbox because all the houses are 100-year-old wood houses. So we had firehouses. Every neighborhood had a firehouse. And that was a big fight we had just a few years ago, if you remember correctly, when they reallocated all the firehouses, when they rebuilt them and stuff. Well, what happened, this chief, you know, they had firemen, you know, while the volunteer firefighters are out bothering me for change for the Crusade for Children and making me feel like crap at every intersection I go to, the Louisville professional firefighters were going door to door with 9-volt batteries and fire detectors. And they saved a crap load of lives. It was a huge big national thing. But they drove the service runs down so much because of fire awareness and fire marshal inspections and new building regulations that the fire department was looking at cuts in fundings and federal grants, and they had to look for a way to bump their calls for service up because that's how you get federal grant. But in public safety, there's no way to prove, like, you know, there's no way to prove we prevented a robbery when I was a policeman, and there's no way to prove the fire department prevented a fire. The only way you can report success is to say we made 300,000 calls for service last year.
Right.
Well, when you have a program that is so good that it cuts your numbers down, and this is a big game in the entire public safety sector, and it can go all the way to the NSA, you know, we got to collect all this data. Why? Because it's there. Well, you know, no.
Well, see, that's the big thing,
though.
So
what the fire department did was they said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We are going to take control of EMS. Because back then, EMS was an independent agency, your ambulance service.
Right.
So the fire department took over EMS. I don't know what year. It was in the late 90s. They took over EMS. But it stayed its own independent wing. And they said, okay, you know, this really bumped us up with our people, and it brought us into compliance with having females because there's a lot of female paramedics and EMTs. Then, they still had this call for service problem. So the chief came up with this great, wonderful idea. All firemen are EMTs. most are, and you know, some are even paramedics, but almost every fireman has to be an EMT. Well, we're going to send these guys out on backup. So, you know, you're having a heart attack, and the ambulance shows up, and then 5 minutes later, a big, gigantic diesel fire truck, pumper truck, or hazmat rig comes rolling up with three firemen in it, and they're rolling them out, not because EMS needs the help, which is a lot of times greatly needed, but, you know, the fire trucks are only 3 minutes away in the urban service district. They're doing it to generate those miles on the road and the calls for service. They go, okay, well, you know, the EMS had a run, so grandma needs to go to the nursing home, and they called us, you know, the ambulance. Here we go. So, you know, grandma gets a $250,000 box ambulance, you know, with a paramedic and an EMT, and she gets a fire truck with six firemen.
And there's a lot of things though that really don't make sense though. I'm actually looking in our chat room. I got a question for you on EMT stuff here in a second, but I'm looking in our chat room. I'm looking in our chat room, Rob, and you know, Mayo, a good friend of the show, Mayo, is asking a question. He's putting in there a comment that he remembers some officers used to keep a big push broom and shovel in their trunk. So when you had a traffic accident and you had debris, the debris was cleaned up. But we don't see that going on anymore. Even the fire department, when they show up, most of the time they just leave the scene and leave the debris. I mean, there's not much. They're picking the big pieces, but the glass and everything else is typically left in a road for people to drive over. So that doesn't make any sense. And then, of course, you know, for me personally, you just mentioned, you know, if the fire department is making 300 runs a year, you know, if they go down to 100 runs a year, that they've done something right. And in a lot of cases, we could say the 9-volt batteries and the smoke detectors are saving lives because we're making less runs, which is less cost to the taxpayer. However, what the city does, they pull those stats up, like you just mentioned, and they say we made 300 runs last year, we only made 100 this year. That's money we're not billing the insurance companies. You make runs whether you need to or not. I mean, that seems to be the thought process. So we're artificially inflating, you know, fire runs, police runs, everything else, just so we have somebody that we could charge money to. So it's turned into a money pit, not a public safety pit. Would you? I mean, is that right, or am I misinterpreting that?
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's not just here in the city. It's nationwide. It's a nationwide issue. As long as it's statistics, not needs of the constituents. I'm talking statistics. As long as an Excel spreadsheet drives your funding for public safety, you're going to get situations like that. You know, we had, for the only reason we have MetroSafe is because there was a federal grant, a Homeland Security grant, that said, okay, we can take the Federal Reserve Building and come up with MetroSafe to buy communications so everybody in the county can talk to each other. You know, that is, you know, that's the only, you know, the 86 different arresting agencies in Jefferson County did not all get together and throw the money in the pot and build the system.
Right.
Everybody argued when we merged, we had five different radio systems in this county, and everybody jealously held on to, you know, their radio system. And why? Because you know, it was theirs and it was their money, and they're going to do it. By golly. You know,
that opens up a whole other can of worms. Rob, I know it's your show, but I want to interrupt you for just a second, if I can.
Sure.
You know, you're not used to doing the daily stuff, but for those of you who are listening to us right now, call the numbers 858-683-1326 or area code 502-805-0334. For you guys that are in the listening queue, make sure you press that little number 1 on your dial pad, and we know you want to get on air. And you can also join our live chats like Mayo is doing right now and be heard there as well. Rob, we've got to take a bottom-of-the-hour break. And, you know, so stick around, folks. We'll be right back. You're listening to TNT Thursday Night True Show with your guest host, Rob Chapman. We'll be right back.
Oh, being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
You know, Rob, I got to tell you, I love that song. Guns N' Roses, Knocking on Heaven's Door, because it seems like that's what we're always doing. We were going to break, Rob. I want to ask you this question before you move on to whatever else you got, because I'm curious. The communications, there was a big stink back in 2006 during the mayor's race when I ran. We were still arguing over the police radio communications and stuff. It was originally supposed to cost like $30 million. Then it went up to $67 million, and I still don't know the final number on that thing. But the problem was that they didn't have the county and the city on the same system. If it's all one department now, which they try to tell us, then they had to have one communication system. And that became a mess for no reason other than political gain and who they were going to favor with the contracts. But yet I still see, once that radio situation was straightened out, there's no need for a police officer to have a city-paid, tax-funder-paid cell phone, and yet I still see officers constantly yakking on their cell phones, sitting in their cars when they're supposed to be on duty finding crime. And that money costs, that costs the taxpayers money, too, and I know they're not talking to their chief of police or they're not talking about a police-related thing. They're talking to their girlfriends, their wives, their aunts, their uncles, whoever. That's costing us money, too. So when we look at this just in the communications part of it, I mean, why are we still paying for these things?
Well, if an officer or a city official is using a city-paid-for cell phone, even the chief of police and even the mayor, they have to, you know, everybody by policy, and I forget the lady's name, and she was a real Nazi about it. You would get a copy of your bill, and every phone call had to be documented. And I can tell you, you know, I was a sergeant, I was a supervisor, I had a phone, and I didn't use my city phone hardly at all, because if it wasn't a city number, if it wasn't a 574 or a 744 number, you better be. Excuse me, I'm having an issue with the computer here.
But okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. No, you better have a reason, and you better be able to annotate it. And if it was a personal call, you had to pay, I forget what it was, 10 cents a minute. But, you know, I retired 2 years ago, and that's the way it was 2 years ago. Most of the time, they're talking on their own cell phones. And that's a huge problem. And every once in a while, you'll catch somebody who was the officer they fired not too long ago, the one that made the Crystal Marlowe. I mean,
that was a nightmare.
That woman, she wore her city phone out. But, you know, it's just, that's what happens. You give somebody, if you're not watching over it, then, you know, it gets abused. But I know, I forget her name for, I mean, dealt with it.
Well, that was common, but that was common under Chief White. But that was common under Chief White. I mean, because there really truly has been no oversight of a lot of these officers. It's like Dustin Hinkie and Brandon Wood, the two pricks that arrested me in July. These guys have had issues. They've had written warnings. They've had other problems in their file. Okay? 3 years on the force, I know that Officer Hinkie had at least three different written warnings in his file. But he was never held accountable. I'm getting some feedback for some reason.
Yeah.
I hate myself.
You know, it's hard. It is really hard to you know, look at. I know you had a really bad thing go down. And it's hard to judge based on, you know, what I read in the papers and what I've heard. I haven't really voiced my opinion on that because I haven't seen the tape and I don't really want to. But you know, it's kind of splitting the cord there. But when people. And this was my major problem with Chief White. He came in on this, you know, on this white horse. He's going to merge the departments. He's going to change this. He's going to change that. And I'll be the first one to tell you, because I wasn't the most popular supervisor on the department, but I'll tell you that we needed somebody to throw a wet bucket a bucket of ice water on some heads in the department, because some people had their heads up their butts. I mean, there were things I saw go on that you're like, seriously, you're killing me? You know, I saw contracts get awarded because of who threw the best trip, not because.
Right.
And I saw people go on trips that had no idea what the trip was about. They just knew, oh, there's this trip, and I'm going. And I'm a lieutenant, so I'm going to outrank you, and I'm going.
Right.
Well, you know, you're not on the telecommunications committee to go out here, you know. And like, oh, we are not going to, you know, New York to look at their communication system. We're going to go to Vegas to look at their communication system. But the city won't let us go, so we'll have to go to Chicago and then L.A. and then, you know, one of the stops we'll hit Vegas. You know, it's stuff like that, you know. And all it took was one of the bosses who knew what was going on is to say, no, we're not doing that. But it
right.
never happened. So we needed somebody. Both departments needed a real, you know, there somebody needed to jerk a knot in their head. You know, the city hated the county, and the county hated the city, and it went back to I don't know how long. You know, I was in the police academy, and we were down in Richmond, and there's 30 city officers going through the academy and 30 county mm-hmm. officers going through the academy, and we weren't allowed to talk to each other. And half of us knew each other growing up. It was
That's
like,
awful.
You know, the Marine, it was like an argument between the Marine Corps and the Army. Who's better?
Right.
You know, I don't
That's,
care. We all carry guns, and we serve in the same area.
Right.
So we needed somebody to come in and say, this is all crap. You know, everybody needs to pull their head out of their butt. We're merging. I don't care, and I'm going to pick the best people for the jobs, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But that didn't happen. You know, he came in, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, and I'm going to all these meetings, and I'm going to get my picture made in, you know, for Louisville Magazine sitting in a Porsche, you know. You know that I'm going to get loaned to me by the dealership, and
right.
I don't think the man ever cared after that, because he just turned everything over to committees.
Well, that was always a problem. There was no leadership. I'm going to go to your phones for you, okay? I'm actually running your studio tonight. People don't know that. For those that do, you do have a call coming in. I'm going to go ahead and put them on real quick.
Sure.
This is off the 805 number. You're on the air with Rob Chapman.
Yeah, it's Mayo Ed.
Hey, Mayo, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. I don't know how long a career Rob has. I kind of go back to my best friend of Frank Peischer's son. So I know
Rob's
a
20-year retiree.
Okay, well,
yeah.
He should have known Frank.
I'm an old city cop. Was he a county cop?
Frank Peischer. He was the officer shot and killed at Manslick and Smyrna.
Okay, he was a county officer. I remember the name. I remember the memorial.
Yeah. But no, I mean, what you were just saying, I agree with a little professional rivalry kind of helps keep people on their toes, but not to the point where you're trying to figure out how to steal funds from one another where it's going to hurt either or.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was so bad. It was to the point sometimes of physical violence that you know, and it got to the point where people wouldn't back each other up. And that's when it's dangerous. And somebody should have thrown somebody's, you know, head under the bus. I remember there was an incident. I was at 22 and right there where the big Ford truck plant is, right on the Oldham County line. And I rolled up on a car wreck. It was a pretty nasty car wreck. And I radioed in and went and you know, called the ambulances, and the cars are a wreck. And I'm out in the county, and I'm a city officer, and the county's supposed to come out and take over the car wreck. And we had the road closed and everything. And I'm standing out there, and the ambulance is pulling away, and I've still got these two cars here, and I can't bring the city trucks out, and all city officers can't come out to help me because I'm by myself. And the county police chief at the time, I forget the guy, oh, what's the guy's name? Super, he was an interim police chief after, daggone it. Anyway, he was an interim police chief. He was a super great guy. He rolls up, he says, "You need any help?" I said, "No, sir, I called in, everything's fine." He said, "How long you been here?" I said, "About 45 minutes. He rolls on and goes and does whatever. After about an hour, an Oldham County policeman and a state trooper come across the county line to help me with traffic. And you have to understand, we're only about a couple of miles away from the Middletown station. And every time we called in, they kept saying, "Oh, they're in roll call." For 2 hours, they're in roll call. Well, we're out here for 2 hours total. The county chief comes rolling back by, and he gets out of his car, and I said, "Sir, I can take this. I just need a report form." And he has his report pad, and he goes, "No, call and get out of here. I'll take care of it." So I get in my car, and I'm driving down the road, and here comes about half the county police department, code 3. Because the chief called off on a car wreck, and he ripped some butt. I've been told by that Oldham County policeman, he ripped butt right in front of the public.
Well, he should have ripped
some butt. That's what we needed, but he wasn't retained when we merged, you know, because he didn't have any master's degree. But we needed a leader like that who was, you know, we do the job. You know, the citizens of the county hired us, and we do the job.
Well, I would also contend that if the chief was really doing his job, he wouldn't have a two-hour roll call. He wouldn't allow that. But that's just me.
No, those guys, they were hanging off the air. But it's called hanging off the air. But I don't want to tell too many cop stories. I'll have until Dale comes back to tell cop stories. Guys, one thing I want to do talk about is Louisville has once again made a top 25 list.
And you put that out on
good
our website. LouisvillePolitics.com. You're going to like this, Mayo.
Yeah. LouisvillePolitics.com. We have been ranked nationally 11th for our redneckedness.
But to be fair, though, Atlanta got number one. So
Atlanta's number one. Atlanta's number one. You know, we're ahead of Nashville, Cleveland, Ohio, Arlington, Texas, Sacramento, California. But just for the sake we're in the great state of Kentucky and the Deliverance TV show, we are 11th in our redneck ability. So on top of being one of the fattest cities, one of the laziest cities, we now have the highest concentration of rednecks. And the scary part about it is it was based on an actual, you know, criteria, an algorithm based on high school dropouts, gun violence, ammo availability, taxidermists, hunting licenses issues, cowboy apparel businesses, registered country music radio stations. Big thing is we have a NASCAR track within an hour of Louisville.
Right.
And most importantly, Walmart's per capita.
You know, that's funny. We laugh, but you think about it. I mean, everybody thinks, I mean, on a national scale, you know, we're sitting here talking about how, you know, the problems that we have and how long they've been here, Rob. On a national scale, though, I mean, this is the way people perceive us in Kentucky anyway. We're barefoot hillbillies. Our women don't have any teeth and they're pregnant all the time by their second or third cousins. I mean, this really isn't a surprise to me that we're the 11th out of the nation for the most redneck city, but it's kind of pathetic that we're not doing anything to take ourselves out of that kind of example. You know what I mean? It's been like this forever.
My personal favorite, you must be a redneck story, is, you know, a little background.
Good old Jeff
Fox. People who don't know. Yeah, for people who don't know, I'm also retired from the U.S. Army. I'm a major, retired major. I was an intelligence analyst and an intelligence operations officer. And when I was deployed, my last deployment, which was in 2007, I was stuck with a unit from Michigan. And my boss, a full colonel, sat there. You know, we're doing this. And I was trapped with these people for 18 months, by the way. And, you know, they immediately deducted 50 IQ points from me based on my accent. And we're in a staff meeting one day with the general, and I'm giving my intelligence analysis. You do this part, and you know, you give your intel briefing for the day to the four-star. And Colonel Armstrong, she goes, "Well, next up will be Major Chapman and his earthy rendition of today's intelligence assessment." And the general got red faced and looked and then looked at me, and I couldn't help it, and I went, "Well, sir, what we're going to do is we're going to drive into this town and we're going to poke around, drive around and stir it up and see what kind of mess we can start."
And you weren't demoted. That's funny.
Well, we both got to go see the general together individually and told to get our issues spurred away. But seriously, these people automatically assumed, because they were from Michigan.
Right.
And I hate Michigan football to this day because of it, because it was the most miserable 18 months of my life. And I've been to Ranger school and airborne school and basic training and everything else. They just immediately deducted, "Ew, you know, we're all going to die because our intel section came from Kentucky."
Yeah, right.
I'm like, shut up.
Jeez.
You know, we got some pretty good awards and we got some recognition and got to meet the Secretary of State because of some of the stuff we did. And this yahoo, who never did squat but gained weight over the 18 months, you know. But that happens, you know. You just deal with it.
If you look at some of these numbers, too, though, Rob, I mean, Mesa, Arizona, they're number 10. You know, there really is some interesting information here because, like, Mesa, Arizona, you know, they've got the highest ratio of gun and ammo stores to people of any city in the nation. They've got 132 gun ammo stores and 446,000 people. That's about one gun store for every 3,300 people.
That's because it's the Arizona border area, and they have the highest ratio of illegal alien drug running coyotes sleeping in the bushes in your backyard.
Right.
I've been there. I've seen it.
Well, you look at this too. Cleveland, Ohio, they're number 9. You know, they've got the lowest high school graduations in the country. Arlington, Texas, they got the most cowboy boot stores per capita and the most riding more and tractor repair shops per capita. Of course, you go to Fort Worth. I mean, what do you do there? Tulsa, Oklahoma, their first motto was America's most beautiful city. In the 60s, they changed it to oil capital of the world. Now they're saying a new kind of energy. They don't have a clue who they are. And Nashville, Tennessee is number 4. That's our comparison city. Remember, we always compare ourselves to Nashville. And, here you are. And then Oklahoma City is number 3. Kansas City, Missouri is number 2. And as I mentioned, Atlanta was number 1. So I find these things pretty interesting. Mayo, we're going to wrap, baby. I appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much. Rob, since I'm running your studio for you tonight, you got 4 minutes left. It's your call. What are you doing?
Well, Ed, I tell you what a lot of people, and I was kind of stuttering to begin with, but what we're going to do with my show, you know, while I'm filling in for Dale, the truth, I want to speak the truth. And I want to speak the truth about how we got where we're at. Because at the end of World War II, we were as big as Detroit. You know, we had the largest aircraft, we had the largest factory in the world at GE Appliance Park. We had the largest refineries in the eastern part of the United States. We had the largest, you know, second only to Chicago for meatpacking. And in the late 40s, the city decided we were going to be a backwater, that they didn't want to modernize. They made a decision. But, you know, if we're going to remain viable, we have to change. You know, hopefully the bridges are a good start. Hopefully 8664 can tear down, you know, this wall known as the Waterson Expressway in 64, which has completely enclosed the poorest parts of the city and prevents the poor from getting out of, you know, the hell that is the west end of Louisville, which is really a swamp. You know, if you think Katrina ravaged areas of, you know, of Louisiana look bad, just go down to, you know, 26th and Broadway. And, you know, so we've got to change. And I'd like to, you know, take this show and get it that way. Now, as far as what, you know, what we do, you know, everybody come to LouisvillePolitics.com. We've got a website. You know, leave comments, leave questions, leave answers. If you got a story idea, send it in. If you want to write a story, send it in. We have some contacts. You know, we work something out. You know, if you have a published paper from school, give it a shot. If you got a Kickstarter campaign, give us a call. We'll talk about it. We want Louisville to grow, and we want Louisville to grow with real people, you know, not the landed money who all live up in Mockingbird Valley and secretly fund river fields to block any progress in this area. How about yourself, Ed?
Well, I like the direction you want to go. You know, it actually fits in pretty good, too, because every week on Dale's show, you know, he does get into some history things. Usually it's national stuff or this day in history kind of stuff. Yeah, I think it's time. I mean, we do focus so much at Louisville Politics on the local issues. But thanks to Barack Obama, we've had to spend a lot of time on national stuff the last few months. So I like bringing it back home, and I'm glad you're going to go down that road with it. Starting next Thursday,
well,
folks.
I mean,
Rob, go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, Ed, since you and I have hooked up, I'm proud to report that you're the highest plagiarized author in the city of Louisville.
You know, I actually mentioned that last night. It's really fascinating to me. Every time I do a story, a couple of days later, the Courier-Journal and everybody else and WHAS 11, there are two primary ones that do it. But they like to call around and go behind me and then try to take credit for a story we've already put out. So if you want the first story and the first news, LouisvillePolitics.com is a place to go. Okay, folks, that's going to be a wrap for tonight. Tune in next week at 7. Rob will be here. Apparently, we're going to be studying Louisville history and how we got here, what we need to do to change it. So you guys enjoy Rob every night for the next few Thursdays, and thanks so much for tuning in. Rob, I appreciate you coming on and filling in for us, buddy.
Hey, Ed. You know, anytime, brother.
All right. Take care, folks. Have a great night.
Was my enemy
to tread on me?
He's come come to take away my liberty. I'd rather die than be a slave to thee.
Don't change me. Hit them hard, we made them pay that day. We hung the traitors from the highest tree.
Sacrifice for God and country.
So
held the ground that was in front of me. This was the price to pay for liberty.
Still you hear me?